stopping it?
Lecture is a very important part of this course, and at the end of it, Sarah is going to make an announcement. So, Sarah, please carry on.
Thank you very much. And those of you who were here a couple of nights ago will have heard me talk on quite an academic subject of population demography. And I'm a very serious academic. I'm an Oxford University professor, I trained as an academic. And unlike a lot of academics at Oxford, but there is a growing number of us, we really believe that if you are doing research, you should also be doing research that is relevant to the world that we live in. I have to say, sadly, a lot of my colleagues don't think that, but the people in my institute definitely think it, and as I say, there is a growing number of people who do this. So I come from this Oxford Institute of Population Ageing, which I set up in 1998, and when I set it up, the idea was that we would do research which was relevant for policy and practice. And we have some kind of little motto, if you go onto our website, which says that good research is that which informs and is informed by good policy and practice. So what I'm going to talk about tonight is something completely different. I have to say that we have won, my institute has won one major award in 16 years, and it was actually for this piece of work. We won the Royal Society of Public Health and Arts annual award in 2011 for this piece of work that we did. It was not a serious research project. It was something that came completely out of the blue. We were approached by Dulwich Museum, who initially said, we've just done this programme on getting arts out into the community, and we would like Oxford University to evaluate it. And we went, okay. They said, look, all the material, that's just the material. We've been collecting questionnaires for the last couple of years, so all you have to do is get one of your statisticians to analyse the questionnaires. Now, they then handed us about 200 questionnaires, which they themselves had designed, which had things like name, age, how often did you come, and what do you feel about the programme. Now, any of the statisticians in the audience know that actually there is, you do actually need quite a lot of data to start doing statistical analysis. And when we looked at it, I have to say that in the written questionnaires, the vast majority of the comments were on the tea and biscuits. So we said, well, we're very happy. We think what you're doing is fantastic, getting art out into the community and particularly to older people. And as you'll see, older people, particularly with depression and dementia. But we really have to get more involved if you want us to help you. So because there were very few resources at the time in the Institute, I was the one who sort of got the job of regularly going from Oxford all the way into London, and then across London to South East London, out to Dulwich, and it was a dreadful journey, about 3 hours each way, so that I could go regularly and work with the people at Dulwich to try and not only evaluate what was going on, but also maybe work with them to help them think about how they could change and expand the programme. But we got totally involved in it. I have two research assistants, Kate Tamblyn and Nana Natatashvila, who works with me, particularly on writing it up and presenting our Good Times document. The Good Times document is called This Is Living, and the reason we called it that was because at the end of the programme, one of the older participants said, this is really living, and we've got what a wonderful way to describe the programme. As I will explain to you, I took my children along, I took my two girls along, and I'm actually going to tell you a story about both of them. And it was an amazing, we spent about 3 years in the end working with Dulwich in a very ad hoc way. I think some of my scientific colleagues will look at us and say, this isn't proper science, but we tried as hard as we could to do what we called a qualitative evaluation. Because one of the real problems we have is that there is now real recognition that the arts are of tremendous value to one's health and well-being. We've had a recent House of Lords report which came out saying the arts are essential and should be integral in community centres, in hospitals, in hospices, in old people's homes, with young people, with children with autism. But it's very, very difficult to actually evaluate it in the terms of science. So So you then have a big body like the Wellcome Trust who say, this is actually fine, but where is your random clinical trial? Where is your pilot study? So what we tried to do was what we called a qualitative assessment, and I'll take you through that, to provide evidence to the medical profession to say it's really important that these kind of programs are integrated into the health system of the UK. And we are making progress, and as you'll see at the end, more and more museums are doing this kind of work, and we've been involved in more projects with different types of museums. And at this, almost at this very moment, in Oxford, we have a series of seminar speakers who are talking about museums and older people. And we're working with the museums in Oxford to try and understand how museums can enhance the lives of well-being of older people. This is about art, but we're also have done work with the University of London looking at artifacts in museums, and we've got the Ashmolean, which is a big, it's about the British Museum, but it's the Oxford equivalent of the British Museum, and we have the Museum of Science and Technology, and we have the Peter Rivers Museum, which is all about people and animals across the world, all trying to get involved in this idea of how important our historical collections and our art and music and drama is to enhancing the well-being of older people. So that's the sort of background of what is going on. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the context. I'm going to take you through the programme, and I'm going to mix stories in, because the stories of the people involved, including actually those of my children, have been very important in understanding the value of this. So this is just some sort of background. So we evaluated the Good Times programme, which was art for older people, by bringing older people into the museums and by taking art out into the community from the Dulwich Museum. But what I was particularly interested in was something called art on prescription, and that was what we focused on. And that was a genius idea of this particular doctor, who said that when an older person comes to me with early stages of dementia, with depression, bereavement, isolation, loneliness, I'm not going to prescribe a pill, I'm going to give them a free token to go to the Dulwich Museum and take part in the variety of activities that they have, because I believe that that will enhance their well-being. And that was really what we were analysing. So the people that we were looking at, not all of them, but a reasonable percentage, had been sent by their GP to the museum to take part in this programme, and we needed to evaluate in some way whether there was a real impact on their well-being. So this is just a few facts about the UK. I think if those of you who were here earlier in the week, there are now more people in the UK over 60 than under... Oops, that shouldn't happen. It's not on the timer. Than under 18. The over 65s in the UK are estimated to spend an average of 80% of their time in their own homes. And isolation and loneliness is a huge issue for our older population. We now know that one in three people over 65 will die with some form of dementia, and we know that the statistics that dementia is becoming an increasing issue as we have a growing older population. And this one I think is particularly sad. Nearly 300,000 older people have gone a full month in the last year without speaking to either family or neighbours. And many older people said they interact only with their postman on a day-to-day basis. So isolation and loneliness leading not only to depression, but probably encouraging dementia, we now think. Definitely mental activity we know can combat, if not dementia itself, but the symptoms of dementia. So to a certain extent, this is the background against which this programme was developed. Now the Dulwich Picture Gallery is a very, very interesting thing. Does anyone know where Dulwich is?
East Dulwich?
East Dulwich. Have you been to the Dulwich Picture Gallery? Yeah, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's a really, really interesting gallery. Basically, what happened was there were two art collectors who, in the beginning of the 19th century, were commissioned by a very wealthy man from Eastern Europe to buy up some of the best art in Europe, with like an unlimited budget. I mean, think of the Arabs today or the Russian oligarchies, that's what we're talking about. And so they bought all this art, whereupon the guy went bankrupt and said, just keep it. So then they were left with this amazing collection of art, and really, really serious European artists. And so by various means, they housed it here in the Dulwich Picture Gallery, which is on the edge of a very, very poor area of London. So there's quite a wealthy sort of suburb, but there's also a very large elderly population, a very large ethnic community, and I'll talk a little bit about that. There's an Indian and Pakistani Bangladeshi community there, very high level of single mothers and people who are on benefits. And yet you've got this very formal British museum. And to a certain extent, you say, how can something like that, how can you integrate, and how can people in the community who are so different ethnically, in terms of education, in terms of their interests? And one of the things Dulwich were aware of was that very, very few local people went to Dulwich. When they looked at who was friends of Dulwich, it was the educated people from different parts of London and different parts of the South East who would go to Dulwich on a regular basis, but practically no people in the community would. So one of the things they really worked on was their community outreach programme. They have a very, very good education programme, which has been incredibly important to my family, as I'll explain. And they really, really worked to interact with people in the community. And it was very obvious that because of the way that the residential structure in that part of London has worked out, a large part of the community were elderly people. And so that's why they thought that's one of the target groups. But this programme also has worked with children, with single mums, and with the ethnic community. And I'll talk a little bit about that as we go through it. So this is an idea. They wanted to extend their expertise to enable isolated older people to find a way of reconnecting with their community. And that's really, really important. Because not only did it become a place where you went to see art, it also almost like became a huge community centre for this very disparate group of individuals. So the whole idea of this was that, if you like, I have to say, before we arrived, they made it up as they went along. They'd never done this before, so they thought, well, let's try out some of these ideas. So they had to devise a whole series of programmes that would match the skills of the existing gallery guides and the artists to the needs of each, what they call, partner group, basically to the older people. And one of the things that we obviously saw in our evaluation is this, and it came out of the Department of Health, and it said, service providers have transformed their ways of working and outcomes by looking at an issue from the patient or the user's perspective. And definitely in academic research, if you're in the social sciences, it is the user that is so important. And I think one of the reasons why this programme was so successful was they looked at it constantly from the older people's perspective. Just to start with, they got all these older people into the gallery, those of you who've been to Dulwich, and it's like mini art galleries. They have little stools, I mean, very trendy, probably designed by some Scandinavian, but impossible to sit on if you're over about 25. One of the first things they did was they invested in sensible seating. They invested in benches that were put in sensible places around the gallery, because many times you go to art galleries and there isn't anywhere to sit. And if you are in your, shall we say, over 75, then by that age you do actually need somewhere to sit down. So that was just an immediate example of how they tried to think from an older person's perspective. And they had a very small group of older people who they knew were coming to the gallery, and so they spoke to them a lot, and they talked to them, and they had groups saying, what do you think we can get out of this gallery? So let me take you through the strands of the Good Times programme, which evolved both before we got involved and whilst we were there. And as it is, I'll talk to you about the people involved. Here we are, this is the specially designed chairs. So one of the things they did, and this guy is absolutely fabulous, he's called Roberto, and he was a storyteller. And what I didn't know is that they're actually professional storytellers. Their jobs are to tell stories and to get people to see the world through stories. A lot of them tend to be in schools, so they work a lot with people in schools, with young children. And Roberto had never ever worked with older people before, although he probably is well into his 60s now. He'd been a storyteller for about 30 years. He was absolutely brilliant. I remember sitting with him when we had a Bruegel, and it was a winter scene. And he started telling a story about the characters in the scene, and then he sort of linked it into sort of fairy tales, and it was mesmerising. He was fantastic. One of the things that came out of this programme the whole time was that it wasn't just the people involved, the older people whose lives were changed, it was the people who took part. the volunteers, the carers, and the guides, and indeed us as well. And one of the things Roberta said was, I have never worked with older people before. When you're telling children, and you tell them a fairy story, they just take it in. When you tell a story like a fairy story to an older audience, of course, they have got all those joys and sadnesses and challenges, and they interpret the story in a completely different way. And as a result of this, he then deliberately went out to start telling stories in old people's homes and with older people's communities, because he actually found it far more rewarding to talk to older people and get them involved in stories. So, gallery tours, but with something like a storyteller. Another thing they had was a dance, so they had a beautiful ballerina who would come and she would perform in front of a painting. So she would look at a painting and then she would do a dance. And again, then you would discuss the dance and talk about the importance of dance and music. So they were very innovative in some of the things they did. And as you can see, look at the pictures, there's a huge Spanish collection. This is a really very formal gallery. And they were doing this whilst everybody else is wandering around. But they did it in it didn't seem disruptive. Another really big thing, of course, was these creative workshops. And they were able to engage, because Dulwich has a very big standing in the art world, a whole series of professional artists who came and worked with older people and trained them in a variety of art techniques. And everything from pottery. I remember there was a wonderful pottery class that they took out to a local community centre. And they had all these old people making jugs and pots and then painting them and designing them. They did watercolours, they did oils, they did landscape. They took people out into the countryside, did landscape. A lot of portrait painting, and I'll come on to that in a minute. One of the elderly people who regularly came was well in her 90s. She was wheeled in by her carer, and literally, and she sat there. She was hopeless, absolutely hopeless. Everything always fell apart. And she said, I've always been hopeless at art. Don't really enjoy art, but I love coming here, and I love doing this with all these people. So even people who weren't particularly artistic, somehow, because they weren't just wheeled in, you know, to play a game or to watch television, but they were actually doing something creative, even somebody like her, who wasn't very good, got some kind of satisfaction out of it. So the creative workshops are very important. And this is it. This is the outreach creative workshops, where they went out. And one of the things they would do is they took both materials and reproductions of the gallery paintings, because remember, it wasn't just painting, it also was talking about the pictures. The story that the picture told was very, very important. And talking to the older person about relating to art. Because part of the idea was that through these workshops, through coming to the galleries, the older person would then choose to come to the gallery. And there was one elderly man, I remember, who was very anti the whole thing, and he'd only come because they said he had to come. And at the end of it, he said, this is wonderful, and next week I'm bringing the missus. This is just an example of celebration. As you can see, food and alcohol did play a very big part. There were always, you know, they did things at Easter, they did things in the summer, they did things at Christmas, and the idea was that, you know, there would be a rhythm to this, and they wanted people to have the idea that this was something that they would regularly come to, and when they came to, there would be different things. I went to some lovely Christmas events where they also involved the local community, they involved the local schools. They're very near to Dulwich College, which is a very posh school, but both the boys and now girls used to come along and take part. This is the one I want to talk about in particular. This was their intergenerational creative workshop. And so what they did was they got a young person from the local community, many of them from the local schools, to come and to work consistently with an older person every week. And I went along, so both my children, but my youngest child I bought, and she was about 13, I think, at the time. And we went to one of these painting classes, and they had done a series of them over about 6 weeks, and I think it was every couple of weeks that people came in 6 weeks, in this particular course. And you had to paint each other in the style of a famous artist. And so, my daughter's Caroline, when Caroline and I arrived, it was the Andy Warhol week. And so I had to paint my daughter, and she had to paint me. And it was fantastic, and we now have this frame up in the kitchen. But what was interesting was how incredibly skilled the elder people were. And I know, I think maybe you've been talking, was it in this course, about creativity?
Tomorrow's
about creativity. And let me tell you, age and creativity, they're very little relationship. You're either creative or you're not creative. And some of the rubbish that these young sick formers were doing compared to some of the fantastic, I mean, some of these older people were just talented. I'm not particularly talented. Caroline, my daughter, isn't particularly talented. We sort of made do. But some of the work that was being produced was fantastic. But it was equally likely to come out of a younger person or out of an older person. The other intergenerational thing that happened to me was that I also brought my other daughter with me. And she was a little bit older. She was 17. And she was doing... just using her A-levels, and she really enjoyed coming, and her school offered history of art. And she worked with me with the outreach department of this museum, and she loved it. And she said, I think I know what I want to do in my life. So she went to Edinburgh, she read history of art for 3 years, she went up to Santa Barbara and did an art course in art in the community. She's now come back, and she's going to train to be a graduate teacher on one of these very fast courses. She's currently in India, where she's teaching English and drama just for sort of a few months. And what she really wants to do is this. She wants to go and work for a museum, sending art out into the community for old and young people. So that completely transformed her life, being involved in this project, because she never would have thought of it. So, it really, as I say, impacted on all sorts of people who were involved in it. Tackling gender differences, I think, is a really important thing, because what was very obvious was that women love doing this kind of thing. I think, women are much more likely, as a general thing, to be happy to go along, to sit, to chat, to take part. Maybe naturally they feel more creative. A lot of these women had done odd bits of art either at school or they belonged to women's groups where they'd done art. The men were much more hesitant. There were fewer men in the community, and they were more hesitant to come along. So one of the things that the programme really worked on was how could we get men more involved? And the boys' school was very important here, because the men related to the young boys in a way much more than they related to the young girls. So they had to sort of, when they asked for volunteers, they had to make sure that they had enough young boys. But this person was really special. So this is, I'm going to call him actually John, that isn't his name, let's just call him John. And he was actually quite advanced in Alzheimer's. And his wife, who's sitting next to him, I think it's called Mary, but I can't quite remember, she would bring him to everything. And to be perfectly honest, you would wheel him in. He could walk, but he really was... And you thought, are you taking any of this in? And he would, he would paint, and it was sort of okay, and he would do things, but it was very blank. And I remember when we interviewed her, because that's one of the things we did, we talked to, and you'll see when we talk about the evaluation, because we talked to the carers, the older person themselves, the volunteers, the artists, etc., who were involved. She said, I cannot tell you the difference that this has made to him. He doesn't speak. And he didn't speak. I never heard him speak. But on a Wednesday, he used to come on a Wednesday, in the evening, she said, I get our children to ring him up. And he talks to them, and he tells them in great detail what he has done at Dulwich that day. And that's it. Doesn't speak for the rest of the week. But just that one evening, and she said it's wonderful for our girls because they're having some kind of interaction with him. So clearly something was happening that, was really sort of, definitely, if you like, enhancing Mary's well-being, but obviously was touching something for John as well. Exploring cultural differences. This was really, really interesting because not only was there an older ethnic community, and as I say here, we obviously have some Afro-Caribbeans, but in fact, the main group that we looked at were, I think it was the Pakistani group. They wanted to get older and younger Pakistani women involved, but how on earth do you stand, you take a Pakistani woman, many of them don't speak English very well, and you put them in front of a Goya, and you try and get some kind of relationship going? So the artists who were doing the tours were really, really struggling with this. And they were trying all sorts of things, trying to find paintings, and these are all very Victorian, European art. And one of the women suddenly went up really, really close and started going like this, And she said, what is this? And the artist said, oh, well, it's some kind of yellow, it's ochre. And she said, oh my goodness. And they all came alive and they all started talking about the actual pigments in the painting and what they were made from and relating it back to, you know, what was happening in Pakistan and what they had used. And suddenly there was this brand new way of looking at this, these paintings. They were interested in the materials and not in the subject. But that was a really good example of how, you know, by just exploring with them, you manage to get even some connection, which on the surface would have been very, very difficult to make. And then this one, this was actually quite extraordinary. So dance, drama and art. This was a theme where the programme went out to one of the local hospices. And they were mainly older people, but not all of them. And there was a brilliant photographer. And she went along with a dressing up box and fantastic costumes. And she just used to bring them all in, one at a time. Sometimes they came in couples, sometimes they came in small groups. And she said, go over and choose something. Put it on, and we will take a photo. Now, these are terminally ill people, and some of them are very frail, but they put these costumes on, and they just became completely different people. And there was one, I fortunately don't have a picture of this, but there was a one very seriously ill older man, and he chose a Superman costume. And he put the Superman costume on, and he was Superman, just for the artist that he had in mind. She took all these wonderful photos. And this is where I'm going to get a bit sad. And she said, the fantastic thing was these people didn't have much longer, and yet they were able to take these wonderful photos to give to their families and to be able to share with them. And this is the bit where I get very sad. That also was a very young girl who had terminal cancer. And she came into the room, and there was a dressing box ahead of her, and she said, what do you want to be? And she ran over, and she picked up the bride's dress. And said, because I would love my parents to see me as a bride. So, which was very emotional, but actually everybody. But what a wonderful, wonderful thing, and you know, they took all sorts of photos of her, and she looked beautiful. So, music. This is funny. I got so depressed and frightened by all the bad news you hear, but this afternoon has made me believe there is goodness in the world. They did fantastic music with them. We did things, they have a sort of chapel, and we did things in the chapel, and then just one-to-ones. And there was, again, another man who never really spoke much, but he sang. It was extraordinary. You know, whenever there was a concert, he would sing, and he remembered the hymns, and you know, but he didn't really speak much. But again, you could really see how this was, he was engaging with this. So, prescription for art. All of those kind of themes that I told you about were available. And there were different ways in which you could become involved. Some people chose what they wanted to do. Sometimes the carer chose. Sometimes people, one of the things they had problems with was obviously transport. How do you get the people into the museum? So they would arrange local transport, small buses. And it could be that in your area, the bus was going to pick you up to take you to pottery. So you went for 6 weeks to pottery. Or you could have been prescription for art. And as I'll just explain again what it was that older people who, particularly it was around dementia, depression, somebody who came and the doctor thought, actually, I think this is really loneliness and isolation. You were given this free access. And then you were enabled to say, you would sit down with one of the volunteers and say, what would you like to do? Would you like to do the music course? Would you like to come on the tours? Would you like to take part in the intergenerational? And they'd talk them through. And these people would say, oh, well, maybe this time I'll just go to the music, or this time I'll just go and do pottery. But once they got involved, they would then come back over and over again. Now, one of the things we wanted to show was that this was really important and that it was actually having some kind of a medical impact. And that's why they wanted us to evaluate it. Because it's great fun doing these things, but you need funding for it, and you need the medical profession to take you seriously. And so the prescription for art, in a way, was the focus of the evaluation. I'll come back to that when it is, but I'm just going to say, still, despite all the work we put in, what they really loved was the refreshments. The refreshments were just so fun. So those of you who are thinking of doing similar schemes, you've got to have good refreshments. But they also did things like, you know, fruit, lots and lots of fruit, lots of homemade sandwiches rather than cake, and really, you know, sort of thought of it from a sort of nutrition point of view. Now, this was quite extraordinary. New skills. This woman here, we had the BBC came and made a sort of a television documentary on it because they heard about it. And it just so happened that one of the classes that we went to with them was quite an advanced art course. And this lady had been coming on several of the art courses. And here we have the lady who is in head of the Dutch Museum. And she was absolutely outstanding. And I remember walking around and, you know, suddenly turned and went, that is so good. And the BBC were there and we brought them over and she said, I want you to take, you know, some filming of this. So they filmed this woman and then we took photos for the brochure. And afterwards we went up and interviewed her and she was just over the moon. And she said, when I was a child, I learnt to paint. I loved painting and I was really, really good. And my tutor at my college, at my school, said, you've got to become an artist, you really are good. So I went home and I spoke to my parents and my father said, no, get a job. And my mother said, I think we should give her a chance. So I went to art college and I learnt how to paint and I was so proud, it's fantastic. So at the end of this year in art college, finished it, and my father said, fine, secretary of college, go and get a job. And she said, that was it. And I'd never, ever painted again. Then I had children, I didn't really have time, etc., etc. And about 6 months ago, she started coming again. And for her, there she is on the television, the BBC is showing her artwork, the head of the museum is saying, this is fantastic. She's in our brochure, her pictures, and in fact, we used one of her pictures to sort of sell the brochure. And at the end of it, she said, you know, none of that training was wasted. What has happened today has made it all worthwhile. I mean, amazing, absolutely amazing. So, you know, qualitatively, we were making this program make a huge difference to people in all sorts of ways. So then, the evaluation. Of course, we came in halfway through. So it's been going for 2 years, we then came in and we followed it. They didn't have any money to pay us, so there was just me, and as I say, with my children and a couple of researchers, and we would potter over so many times a year. We tried to get involved, so we tried to see one of each of these activities, and we obviously got to know the team when they came to Oxford, but it was a very much a qualitative evaluation, and a lot of it was retrospective, because it was based on interviews and what people were talking about, as well as obviously the interviews we did at the time. And you have to remember, one of the problems is that, you know, if you talk to people about retrospective material, in a way, they're telling a story about what happened, not what happened. We all do that. You know, I mean, if we look back on our lives through things like reminiscence, we know we tried to make order of our life. And of course, we made that decision because of this. That's why we made that decision. In fact, we probably didn't. But now, 40 years on, it's a good way to do it. So it's very difficult to talk to people like, what were your lives before you came, and what are they like now? So we had to be very, very careful because we wanted this to be taken seriously. So we did a retrospective qualitative evaluation. We took a case study approach, documenting outputs and participants' testimonies gathered through questionnaires, interviews and discussion groups. It's actually very good. I think if you can get people in discussion groups, technically they're called focus groups, but you get them and you have someone who's very skilled at doing this, and you really can get a lot of information out. But a lot of it was just one-to-one sitting and chatting to the people and collecting their stories. So our three methods were, we had a variety of evaluative responses and what we call reflections. We did serious interviews with two different groups of participants, one which were on the art on the prescription group, tended to be originally with depression and dementia, and another group which weren't. They volunteered and signed up. And we did a lot of observation with the evaluator participating in the activity, that's me with my children. participating. We made notes both at the time and after the activity, and we looked at things like group structure, the activity process, the interactions, and importantly, the facilitation strategies. Because what is important is that, of course, these people who were doing this, they were trained to work with older people. They were artists, storytellers, curators in museums. And so we now know a lot more about how you actually do this, but at the time we were really sort of trying to work out what was a good way of bringing these people on board. As the programme went on, they did get more sort of social workers, and they got a couple of sort of occupational therapists who came along. But to start with, it was just people in the museum doing this. So the main thing, I think, the really main conclusion was this fantastic social network that came through the programme. And one of the reasons we were interested was to say, well, is there really any difference between, to be honest, us just providing tea and cake once a week in the museum cafeteria, or doing some kind of painting in a community centre, or bingo, or some kind of nature walk. And what was it about this programme that we think actually had a bigger impact? And I think there were two things. Because the people were doing the same activity each week, they made real friends and networks. Because every week they were learning different painting techniques, or they were analysing pictures, and therefore they were sort of learning together. And I think that was really, really important. And of course, Dulwich became much more of a sort of community hub for them. And then the other thing is the self-confidence. And I think that was really, really important. That, as I said, some of them were fantastic artists. And, nobody had ever pointed out to them that they were good. And there they were doing art in Dulwich Museum with real artists. And I think that enhanced self-confidence, which they wouldn't have got from just playing bingo or just having a cup of tea, was really, really important. And this came out, the sense of self-worth and their own creativity. Over and over again, people said, didn't know I could do that. I'm really, really proud of having done that. There was a wonderful, they did an embroidery screen, and one of the women finished the embroidery screen and then died. But her husband, or her widow, came to the sort of unveiling of it, and he was so proud because there was this living testimony in Dulwich Museum of his wife's embroidery. This is, I think, very, very important. The workshop enabled the creation of a new identity for the people, that of someone who was creative as opposed to just an art person. And I think that was just so important that in many of the other activities they might be involved in, they were sort of wheeled in, I'm Jane, I'm an 80-year-old woman, I'm going to play bingo, I'm going to have a cup of tea, I'm going to get home. But this, Jane Sutton was an artist, and here was Jane's art, and other people had seen her art, and the sort of creativity bit of it, I think, was really, really important. And this is where it gets a bit social science-y, but the new identity, I suggested, had three broad components. It had the current identity, but it also gave them a future identity, that in their life story, suddenly they would always be Jane the artist, and that would stay with them forever. So even when they left the programme, some of them obviously became very frail and weren't able to continue, but that future identity would be part of it, and the shared identity of those around them, that social network that they were doing things with other people very similar to themselves. So, did we identify health benefits or not? What is claimed is that the arts can supplement and enhance the efficacy of conventional medical treatment. Nobody was actually saying that if someone's sick, they should just go to Dutch Museum. What Art and Prescription says is that in cases where there are particularly depression, dementia, and loneliness, which the doctor identifies as actually the cause behind the symptoms, we should try something like Art and Prescription. And without any doubt, a huge number of them didn't take medication, and I'm pretty sure that if they'd gone to a different GP, they would have had yet more medication. It's very clear that the sessions at the time alleviated the symptoms of depression. What we were not able to do was, because there wasn't a follow-up, we were not able to say whether that continued when they left. And I'm going to tell you what I think is a really sad story about funding for this area later. Definitely the sessions gave the people a new purpose and an activity to look forward to. And also, it definitely improved family relationships. We did quite a lot of work with the carers, who a lot of them were family members, and they said, I cannot tell you how this has, you know, basically enhanced us all because X is, you know, bringing home art and is taking part in this. What made this programme so special? We said that there were five things that were really important. There was a fixed established point of connection, and I think there's Roberto again. I think you cannot underestimate the fact that it was Dulwich Museum, this huge icon in the community that they suddenly belonged to. I mean, many of them, you know, remember this person said, I've lived here all my life, I've never been. You know, my kind of person doesn't go to Dulwich Museum. And suddenly, it was their community centre. That was really, really important. There was a huge commitment by the organisers. They were fantastic people. The fact that they went out of their way to try and get us involved because they wanted it rather stamped as a good programme, but they really, really were committed. The mainstreaming of the programme, this became a really important component of Dulwich Museum, and still is. I mean, they still are working in this kind of an area, and they are encouraging other museums to do similar kinds of work. And when we launched the programme, we launched it with all sorts of, you know, good and the great, in Chelsea Hospital, you know, where you had the old Chelsea pensioners. And it was a fantastic thing, and we had MPs and people from the House of Lords, and they were absolutely determined that this was going to be a really sort of high-profile event. And when you think of everything else that they do, you know, they have wonderful contemporary art exhibitions. This, the Dulwich Good Times programme, they gave it the kind of standing all their other activities do. There was a very wide range of activities, as I've explained, and ownership by those involved. There was this real sense, the older people felt, this is our museum and they're doing this for us. And the staff who were involved felt that they were really part of it. It wasn't just directed from above. Everybody who was involved had this feeling, you know, we're involved in this Good Times programme. Art for older people, what about the future? So this is what we say at the end of our report. It is clear that the Good Times model is one that should not be exclusive to Dulwich, but can be replicated across our museums and gallery sectors, bringing real benefits to our older people. Now, in theory, you know, the UK government is really bought into this idea, but I have to say we have been involved in two big, big funding proposals to have this kind of activity very seriously evaluated. Number one was absolutely phenomenal. We managed to get involved with Southwark Health Trust. And there's a lot of ethics around doing work with older people, and particularly if you've got any kind of intervention, and particularly if the NHS is involved. But Southwark had got NHS ethics approval to bring into people's homes sensors so they could see how many times they went to the fridge, how much they were sleeping, how much activity they got. They had medical people who were going to come in and do these serious medical assessments. And we, with Dulwich and with Southwark, we built this programme whereby we were going to run it again for a year. We were going to evaluate about 100 older people at the beginning, 100 older people in the middle, 100 older people at the end, and then a sort of six-month follow-up. And it is, I think, one of the best projects that Mind Street has ever, ever put together. And we put it to the Arts and Humanities Research Council and the Economic and Social Science Research Council, and two of the big academic research councils. And we had fabulous reviews, and the leaders of the people who were looking at this went back, they were from that. It was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous, because this was a chance to do a really, really serious evaluation. We've not forgotten it, we still have it on the books, and we will get this project funded, because unless you can get serious, serious evaluation of this, particularly the medical community is going to find it difficult to actually sort of buy into it. The second thing we were involved in, and I'm sorry to say that story, and this was funded by the Medical Research Council and the EPSRC, which is basically the life sciences. And this was a brilliant project with UCL, and it was their project, not ours, They'd heard about the Dulwich project. They'd gone to Dulwich and they said, we would like to do a similar kind of evaluation, but the idea they had was to work with people with Alzheimer's and to work with the London museums, and particularly with artefacts. And they were what we were, there was in our team, there was us, there was a doctor, there was a sort of an archaeologist, and there was a woman whose job was to take artefacts into schools. And what we were going to do was we were going to divide, and again we had a lot of people, we must have had over 100, I would say maybe it was, I don't think how many we had, maybe was it 50 older people. I know that's statistical power. And what we were going to do was we were going to have this group, they were going to come to talks about, you know, the museum. This group were going to be taken on tours and actually go to the museums, and this group were going to be given the artefacts to hold, because the pilot work that had been done said, if you have dementia, it's no good talking to you, it's no good even actually showing you, you've got to hold it and feel it. And the hypothesis of this project was that actually holding these artefacts was going to have a noticeable impact on the well-being of older people. It was all going to be clinically assessed and everything. And exactly the same thing happened. We got through to the very last rounds, and then everyone said, fantastic project, but sorry, we haven't got enough research money. Which, yeah, sadly, is the case with a lot of academic research. You have to put about 10 projects in to get one. So, but it shows how much genuine interest there is out there in this work and in proper evaluation of this work. I think, yes, that is the last slide. So, we loved doing this. As I say, we got our only big award for the Institute for this project. In a way, it wasn't a proper research project. We tried to make it a proper research project. We involved people in the Institute in it. We really got to know the people at the museum, and we were convinced that these kind of projects, done sensibly, can have a real impact on the well-being, not only of older people, but of the people who work with them. And I have to say, the photographer, the storyteller, the museum curator, everybody who was involved in this went, wow, this has really changed the way that I, not only look at older people, because they're people, but the way, you know, I look at life, actually, working with people who I don't normally work with. The announcement I meant to say is, I'm going to get this completely wrong, that you've all got to come on Saturday.
And bring somebody with you.
And bring somebody with you.
Who has dementia or Alzheimer's.
With their normal carer.
And that's part of the university outreach. That's part of my
and that is why you're here.
Summer school is very white. And this is to try and reach more people in a different way and in a way that we think could be enormously worthwhile for everybody involved.
Because I know one of the things Kate is very keen is that at least one, if not several museums here in Cape Town should begin to think about buying into this programme. And I am absolutely, A, we'd be very willing to help, and I am sure, knowing the Dulwich people, that they would be willing to help. So I hope that's given you an idea of our Good Times programme. And then to tell Kate if they're coming. I've got the computer on Star Trek.
I would just like
to say, this is no shame, I would just like to say thank you to Sarah, that your time with us has really been inspiring, and I hope that this will be the last time you come to Cape Town and to some school, and I hope that we'll see you again.
Thank you very much. Am I meant to ask the questions, or is that?
What questions?
Well, people want to ask questions.
Oh, yes.
Sorry. You don't have to, you can just go. But people want to ask questions. Yes, let's have this lady here.
I'm quite interested in the approach of the people who didn't have Alzheimer's, the ones who did have Alzheimer's. How did they? Because it is quite difficult.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a really good point, because one of the things they were very keen was that people with dementia should be in the same group as people who didn't have dementia.
And that was actually quite challenging, because wanted to mention to became the carer, but I think in retrospect, to be perfectly honest, they have such special needs that it probably would have been better if they'd had separate classes, because then they really could, I mean, to have maybe three or four of them together with their carers and really being able to focus on them. Because the few classes I went to where there was someone with dementia, it could be very challenging for the person. Because, I mean, these aren't experts, I mean, these aren't medical people, these are artists and drama people, and they weren't trained. I mean, that's the other thing. This was very much sort of outreach thing. So it was different. And I would say in the majority of the cases, we related to the carers rather than to the individual. It was in the stories afterwards that we got feedback on the impact.
I had a granny who incidentally lived to be 100.
Right.
She was a very good artist as a child. When she got to the age of 12, and she really did beautiful drawings that she copied, and we could have them framed. When she got to the age of 12, her mother said, "No more." She was jealous. Never did it again.
Yes.
She was never trained, but she would have been a fantastic artist.
Yes.
So I was so pleased to hear about the lady who did start.
Yes.
She was a
And I think there are sort of two sort of stories there. One, I suppose, about if you are creative, you are creative, and it stays with you across the sun. I can't tell you how that this woman was. She was, you know, amazing. But also, I am sure, particularly among that generation, there were so many women that happened to. Maybe some men I didn't know so much, but women, remember, that generation, it was very much, you know, you go out, you earn some money, you have a child, you get married, and that's kind of, you know. So it's very sad. Yes, but it's a wonderful thing, this other woman.
Yes.
How did the museum pay for the sports? Were they lots of voluntary workers?
Yeah, no, I mean, the fundraising was really important. They had some government funding. They got money from the Arts Council, which I think probably our current government has now got rid of, but they did have some money from the Arts Council to do outreach work. Part of bringing us in on board was to raise money for them. And the real sorrow of this Southwark study was that we had built a huge amount of money in that to run the Good Times programme. But no, it was just general fundraising. So I think those that could pay and weren't on art on prescription, you didn't pay. And I think those who could pay paid a couple of pounds or something, or contributed to the biscuits, or contributed to the transport. But you're right. I mean, you know, the photographer needed pay, the storyteller needed pay. So it wasn't a huge amount of money, but they did need to raise funds. But it was all just general fundraising.
Has what you've told us been written up anywhere?
Yes. There is something called This Is Living. In fact, I can't let you have this, but I have got a copy of it here. But you can get it via Kate from us. You can either get it as a PDF, or if you want the real thing. As I say, I'm really sorry I can't let you have this. Okay, and it's beautiful. That is the beginning of one of those, that wonderful woman, you probably can't see, that's her painting on the back, and she's just beginning to paint these, it was just fabulous. But it's, because it was done by Dulwich, it is beautifully produced, and a lot of the people and pictures and stories from there. But if you let Kate know, we definitely can ship you some copies, because we have a lot of these. But it's also available on our website, which Kate already has, and you can get it as a PDF. Or you can just browse it on the website and go that way inclined.
What's your website address?
Sorry, www.aging.ox.ac.uk. And when you go on our website, you'll see everything else we do, and all my colleagues, and you'll see Kate, and you'll see Nami.
Just say it again, please, worldwide.
Aging, A-G-E-I-N-G, .ox, .ac, .uk.
Thank you.
That's us. And you'll see, because in fact, we also run... We have collaborations where we're trying to capacity build with the kind of vision we have for people understanding population aging in four regions of the world. And our very first capacity group we built, we started in 2005, it's called AFRAN,
and it is the African Aging Research Network. And all across Africa, we have tried to build capacity to get people to focus on the fact that Africa is aging, and that individuals in this part of the world are living longer, and that a lot of older people are mainstays of communities and households. So those of you who are interested, if you go onto our website, you can look at AFRAM. We had a huge meeting in Cape Town last October, I think it was, or October 2012, and we are trying to work with your gerontology centre here to sort of boost those kind of activities. And there's a man at the back. Hello.
Just going back to your funding,
yes.
What numbers were you looking for?
What sort of numbers? Probably about 250,000 to do a proper evaluation. To run the programme was much less. To run the programme we probably needed about 50,000. But to do an evaluation, I mean, that's the problem. It takes time and you've got to pay people salaries. And so it was that kind of figures. So they weren't massive. No. And that's ridiculous, isn't it? It was just a year's funding. And the MRC gave out millions and millions of random control trials. But this...
He's approaching football or something.
Well, maybe I'll come and see you afterwards if you have any brilliant ideas. You know him?
No, I don't.
Yes, he does, but unfortunately, I think David Beckham's got a lot of. And he's just going somewhere else. Just
Miami.
Football
club in Miami.
There you are.
Okay.
Yes.
What percentage of people on the programme, what percentage had Alzheimer's or dementia compared to those who are just old people?
I would say it was around 10-15%
had Alzheimer's.
Had Alzheimer's. And they nearly all of those people came through Artin prescription. Mainly because when the programme was started, it was to combat the loneliness in the community. And it was halfway through, they got quite a lot of people onto the programme. They then decided to do this ART on prescription, which was when we arrived. We sort of happened to arrive when everyone was talking about this. And at that stage, they started sending people with dementia. There were more people, I would say, who had probably been diagnosed with depression.
And so would you say that the programme is equally beneficial for those three groups? Alzheimer's, depression,
absolutely.
Old age.
Absolutely.
Now, that's very exciting, yes. Very interesting.
Yes. Now, you really need to do a proper evaluation, particularly if you've got dementia. But definitely the feedback we got from the carers, like the stories I told you, the man who would sing, never spoke, but always would sing, you know, when they had a concert, and particularly this guy called John, who spoke once a week, and it was amazing, and his wife, who was that other woman there, you know, the fact that she then said, that's the only time he ever talks to the children, but they know they've got to ring up on Wednesday, and he will tell them in great detail about his painting. And that was just fantastic to the family. So it's all very qualitative, but I think there's definitely something there.
Art as therapy,
and is there a thing at universities? Yes, definitely. And hospitals. And I'm trying to think, I think it was in about 2007, which was roughly when we got involved originally in this programme. The House of Lords did a big report where it talked about all hospitals really should move towards having art therapy. And you're actually right, because in a way, people often say to me, what is the difference between this and art therapy? And I haven't talked to you about this, but some of the things they did also was they did some music classes, they did some drama classes as well. And so one of the things we had to look about, well, you can't just wheel people into a community centre, give them a paintbrush, and you know they'll paint, and we know that that's good. What we were trying to show was that there was actually something different about it being. And to me, it was because it was, you know, the mainstream in the community. So the community was saying to the older people, "You are important. The museum is putting this on, And you're going to get involved, and it's going to be your programme. So the museum isn't just this big thing that sits there. It's part of, and it's all these different things you can do, and you're going to do them with your friends, and you can be creative. And it is not Molly the occupational therapist, and I think occupational therapy is wonderful, who is teaching you to paint. It is this great artist that you've been, you know, the exhibition is on, but here he is, and he's going to do a session with you. And we think that is as important as him doing a session at the local art college. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it was that, that this was very high status, this programme.
So the art therapy courses should be important?
Yes. Well, I think so. I mean, I think we now have evidence around, you know, I mean, the whole creative world and how important creativity is to us at all stages of life. But, you know, as you all know, and as, you know, we've seen from here, often it's something we do with our children, and then we might have access to dabble a little bit with it. You know, my husband's just thinking about painting. And it's changed, let me tell you, many of you have such a grumpy husband. Get home to paint! It really is fantastic. It is calm, yes, it's calmed him down, it gives him a focus. And I mean, he's a mathematician. You know, he's not very musical, but he's very much, he thinks. And suddenly here he is painting. And his painting is actually getting quite good. So, you know, I mean, I think we know that art is important. But this was something slightly different as well.
If you haven't got someone to bring on Saturday, can you just come?
Yes, you could help look after them.
Yes, please just come. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well, no, thank you.
Thank you.